The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome in, everybody. Kip Kiefer with you. Another edition of Need to Know on TKR. It is Monday morning, July the 7th, 7-7. Happy birthday to my dear friend over in Atlanta, Sharon Byerly Beal, who is born on what I always say, the luckiest day of the year. If you're double sevens, you got it going on. So happy birthday, Sharon. Let's get that personal business out of the way. One of the best people I know. Let's talk about the weekend a little bit. Of course, it was a joyous time in America with the 249th birthday of our nation and the celebration of two great weeks for America, culminating with last week's passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill. There's a lot of controversy that's, to be totally blunt, ridiculous and misguided and meant to confuse people in the public who don't take the time to research that issue itself. I would probably be talking about that in depth today, but today I really need to focus for my own sanity and to just get it off my chest, the whole situation that was tragic on this joyous weekend. And that, of course, was the catastrophic flooding and deaths of now 80 some odd people and counting in Central Texas, in Kerr County, Texas, more specifically the small town of Kerrville, Texas. And a lot of the victims, almost 30 now, so about a third of the victims, young children, mostly young females who were attending Camp Mystic, which is a long-standing tradition in that part of the country. People from all over the country send their daughters anywhere from the ages to from 7 to 16, I believe, to this camp every summer for a couple of weeks. It's kind of become an institution, and a lot of the fatalities stunningly come from there. And I can't get out of my mind thinking about the parents of these beautiful little girls at a Christian camp to bond with their sisters in certainly in age and experience, and have this horrifying thing happen. Can just put yourself in the shoes of those parents and think about the incalculable loss that they're dealing with today, knowing that their little girl will not be coming home. I mean, it's almost making me tear up just talking about it right now, because it's so traumatic and so horrible. I don't know how people ever can carry on after something like this occurs, and it's tugging at every emotional string within my body and mind and heart and soul. And I wanted to kind of frame what happened and why it happened and what could have been done, and also talk about the most absolutely disgusting, reprehensible, inexcusable aspect of this that opponents of President Trump already are trying to associate this most inconceivable, just absolutely anomalous event, natural disaster, trying to point the finger at the White House and Donald Trump policies for what happened on Thursday night late. Actually, it was early Friday morning on, ironically, the 4th of July, when the terrible tragedy occurred. So we're going to get into all that. Let's start by saying that this is something that is a phenomenon. If you're a human being, you're going to have challenging trauma of different circumstances that seemingly come out of nowhere, or, you know, 10,000 to one shots. This situation on Friday morning resulted from weather patterns that, you know, just have to be perfect to make it occur. We saw in Alabama, we lost 85, or I think it was 86, actually, of our fellow Alabamians back on March the 27th. Actually, it was April 27th. I got to get my dates right. April 27th, 2011, when the gigantic tornadoes clobbered our state. Same thing. It was weather anomaly. It was a perfect mix of circumstances meteorologically that led to that occurrence. This happened again on Friday morning in Kerrville, Texas, where two different fronts, low pressure fronts, which were our big rainmakers, one coming up from the Gulf of Mexico and proceeding on up in a westerly direction, a northwesterly direction towards central Texas, the other emanating from the Mexican Peninsula, a landmass storm. But both of these arrived at virtually the same time over this one central part of Texas. And when they did, they collided, and they were influenced by at this time of year, it's kind of unprecedented. And to call it a cold front is ridiculous, because it's not going to really create cold weather, but it is a dry, colder air mass coming from in a southerly direction from the north. And it arrived at the same time to, in essence, and I'm trying to be a layman here from the terminology standpoint, I'm not a meteorologist. I don't have a degree, but I have some knowledge on weather. The cold front basically kind of contained both of those low pressure systems right over that spot. They kind of stifled their movement. They would have crossed paths, created a lot of rain, but gone along their way. But the cold front basically locked them in place. So both of them rained and rained and rained starting late Thursday night into the wee hours of the morning after midnight. And the situation became apparent to weather forecasters. And let me explain how this works. The National Weather Service, of course, a bureaucracy is in Washington with all their bean counters and managements and secondary managers and third and supervisors and the big bureaucratic conglomerate that makes up every one of these departments and bureaus. The forecasters of the National Weather Service are dispatched to all different areas of the country. Here in Birmingham, where this broadcast is coming from, I believe our local National Weather Service office is located at the Shelby County Airport, which is near the town of Montevallo, Alabama, south of the city. And it's the same at every single location. There's a local forecasting area for every region of the country, not necessarily city, but every region of the country, where you see the radar and you get the up to the minute forecast based on all the weather trends. This is present in Central Texas as well. And the local forecasters first issued a warning at 1:14 a.m. that this was potentially a severe flash flooding possibility with the amount of rain that was pouring down and the completely stationary cold front that was holding in these two low pressure systems. And it just rained and rained and rained for hours. What was not anticipated, and it was later, another warning came along that people should get out of the path of danger, because this is potentially a serious, potentially life-threatening situation. That warning was issued, and that's important when I tell you the follow-up to that that's coming here in just a couple of minutes, so keep that in mind. Also, you have to consider that this area of Texas is characterized by hills and elevation surrounding the flat valley area as you kind of descend downhill, and the whole town of Kerrville and most of the other towns in Kerr County are built in these flat plateaus that are at the bottom of these hilly areas. And what that does is provide basically a perfect pipeline for when the rivers overflow surrounding these towns, in this case, the Guadalupe River, when it reaches flood stage, it can come just blasting down the hillside, down into the flat part, which is called by residents the low country. It is almost like a perfect pipeline to channel floodwaters, and that's why a warning was issued in the middle of the night that this is potentially life-threatening. But the problem is, this was sent out in the middle of the night, and cell phones are supposed to go off, and there's supposed to be alarm, but people are soundly sleeping and not paying attention. I know I can tell you that probably 80% of my friends and family turn their phones off or even deactivate these kind of warnings on their phones because they don't want to have their sleep disturbed. Because here's what we're dealing with here from a weather and meteorological standpoint. Even if conditions are prime for something horrendous and horrifying and completely anomalous and unexpected to happen, it's still in many cases 100-to-1 shot, a 500-to-1 shot that everything will completely be choreographed to create the nightmare that we saw in the early morning hours of July 4th this past Friday, still are highly unlikely to occur, even if circumstances exist that make it possible. So people, it's kind of like the whole, in any kind of warnings or threats. Most people take, of course, tornado warnings seriously and are aware of what's going on. But that's why it's so dangerous if you've got these violent storms that produce tornadoes in the middle of the night. It's even the danger elevation is tremendously increased, because people aren't focused on it. They're sleeping. So bottom line is, even with those warnings, and there were people monitoring it, of course, in weather offices, there were 11 warnings between the initial one at 1:14 to watch out for serious, possibly severe flash floods, all the way up till the time where the floodwaters crested, and a warning about 3:45 in the morning said that this tremendous amount of rain had changed the level of elevation on the Guadalupe River from about 18 feet to an unbelievable 29 feet. And in just the course of an hour, that much increase in the flood stage had taken place. And of course, it came over and roared down upon the town and bared down on Camp Mystic just outside of town on the east of Kerrville, built predominantly around the riverbanks and into some higher elevation. So all of the things that combine to make this happen, perfect storm, the whole phrase perfect storm comes from these kind of circumstances. Just about every major shipwreck, terrible, severe, dead killer hurricanes and tornadoes almost always result from a perfect set of circumstances that are still, from an odds standpoint, highly unlikely. So it's to be understood, because even when the potential threat was put out that this was potentially deadly, it puts officials in a really bad spot, because if you sound the alarm, and if I don't even know if the infrastructure of these communities has major siren capabilities, I imagine for tornadoes, they're certainly in place, but if you have a couple of hours leading up to when this is expected to be an event, you still have time to try and warn as many people as possible through whatever means necessary. And sirens would be the logical situation, or having law enforcement called in, riding around with loudspeakers or whatever kind of conveyances they can through neighborhoods and areas. And a lot of this is spread out because it's sort of a rural small town community. But helicopters, that there are devices that you can put out this dire warning. But the problem with that is, if it turns out to be a dud, you're going to disturb people in the middle of the night. They're going to say, this was ridiculous. I remember when I lived in a big apartment building, about once every couple of months, all the alarms would go off in the middle of the night, and you had to go trooping outside and stand around until an all clear was issued. Only one time in the 4 years I live there, was it actually a fire situation, and it was on a lower floor. It was a kitchen fire that was quickly extinguished. So every other time at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, in your pajama bottoms, and a lot of times for me, bare feet, I'm standing out on the concrete with my neighbors. Nobody's talking to each other. Everybody's half asleep, but it was a false warning, and it became highly irritating. It gets back to the old story about Chicken Little always crying wolf. And or Chicken Little's case, it was the sky is falling, the little boy crying wolf. Eventually, it comes to pass, and in case of the wolf, of course, the sky never fell. But it just emphasizes the point that, you know, generally there's a reluctance to call an all-out alarm on something that's speculative and still against the odds of happening. But in this case, it did. And local residents, if you really want one other compelling piece of evidence, local residents call those passages down from the elevated hills, they call those flash flood pathways, because that town has had the experience in 1987. The river crested or rose to a level almost comparable to this height. I believe the figure was 27 feet, just a couple of feet short of the 29. And serious flooding, same way, occurred. I don't know what time of year that was. I didn't really have time to research it this morning, but I don't know if it was during the daytime, but in the daylight, when warnings can be issued, and warnings were issued in this situation. And again, that's going to be important when I get to the next aspect of this in just a moment. But the point was, there was loss of life. There was serious damage. So as recently as 1987, which was 38 years ago, which is quite a while, they had a serious situation comparable to this. In 1932, they had a worse situation in Kerr County than this, where abundant loss of life in an area that wasn't nearly as populated as it is now took place, when the river actually overflowed 7 more feet than the 29, 36 feet. It was the level rose again, a meteorological phenomenon causing so much rainfall that the banks of the river couldn't contain the water, and it just becomes this raging flood, uprooting trees, taking houses off of their supports, and making, of course, residents highly in danger if they can't get to higher elevated ground. Again, there are hills on both sides, so this is like a perfect funnel of all this water just descending with this force that's inconceivable. If it just rips a tree by the roots right out of the ground and lifts houses off of their foundations, that gives you an indication of the power and the awesome strength of these kind of storms. And these little girls at camp in the summer really had no warning. The officials at the camp were aware. The director of the camp, who had been running it for a long time, by all reports, one of just a wonderful, warm, dedicated man, tried everything to try to warn as many campers to try to run to safety, but it was an impossible job. There were some other counselors there, of course, as well, but it all happened so fast and was so sudden that it caught everybody off guard in the middle of the night. It's a horrible tragedy. It's unthinkable. It's impossible to conceive and reconcile in your brain the loss these people have suffered and the absolute horror of this event. So with all that being said, I have to point out that the awful opinion, or I should say, quote, that came from Democrat operative, former Barack Obama staffer, Rahm Emanuel, former failed government of Chicago, who's now actually contemplating running for president. He took a line and paraphrased it right out of the book, The Radical Handbook, The Radical's Handbook, written by Saul Alinsky in the late 60s, when all of those protest movements had fizzled out that resulted in just an unbelievably tumultuous decade. When the words that Rahm Emanuel used was, never let a serious crisis be wasted. And right away, all of these leftists, all of these Trump haters, everybody who's waiting with bated breath and rabid anticipation to do anything to point the finger at the White House and the President of the United States, Donald Trump. These people, while 400 volunteers, dogs, all kinds of trained professionals, the federal government response was instantaneous. They had people on the ground by sunrise the next morning, right after this just occurred 3 or 4 hours earlier. And the effort to rescue people was on en masse, and to look for victims and to try and recover everyone who sadly, tragically lost their lives. That initiative, already underway and incomplete, we're still in total shock and mourning. And you actually had these leftist jackasses going on social media, going on MSNBC, Al Sharpton, leading the parade, saying this is attributable to the actions taken by Donald Trump and his Doge budget cutters coming in and cutting 17% of the National Weather Service budget. This is directly attributable to that. How many forecasters were laid off who could have given better information and fair warning? It is absolutely reprehensible that in the first hours after this tragedy, you had people trying to politicize it when we hadn't even recovered the bodies of these sweet, innocent victims that have been washed away by an unthinkable natural phenomenon disaster. And it gets worse. I saw a climate change maniac come on and say, see, we keep telling you, weather is getting violent. It is an absolute crisis here. We have got to reverse our course. We have got to adopt things to stop all of these trends on our planet. Of course, they attributed the Los Angeles fires. They attribute every hurricane and tornado. I just told you about previous incidents in 1987 and 1932. There were floods back in the 1400s in ancient China that killed 500,000 at least people several times on the Yellow River. Johnstown, Pennsylvania, 1889. Tumultuous floodwaters killing hundreds of residents when a dam could not contain the waters and just a complete cascade of water just poured down on the townspeople, washing away everything, including countless lives. This is a natural phenomenon. These are Mother Nature disasters. And no matter how sophisticated we think we are not more sophisticated than all of the natural phenomenon that can occur on this planet. So for these people to come on and try and politicize these situations and try to point the finger, and of course, that same maniac talked about all of the funding that's going to dry up now for all of this myth of climate change. change. Climate change did not cause what happened on Friday morning. It's climate change is something that is a contrived measure to try and scare people into believing that a free society and industrialized society has anything to do with changes that occur on Earth. Maybe the climate is adjusting, but this planet has been around for 4 billion years. That's with a B, 4 billion years. And it has acclimated and it has adjusted and it has trended and it has had different phases and it will continue to do that. And the tiny blip on the radar that our lives here, our brief stay, anybody who is idiotic enough to think that our impact can completely influence the planet and the way it evolves and the way it reacts is just absolutely showing no intellect whatsoever. It's just ridiculous. It's absurd. And any suggestion that any policy coming out of Washington or the evils of our industrialized society using fossil fuels, developing coal, all of the different things that you use gas stoves or pizza places use wood burning ovens. It's all ridiculous. It is not the reason that the planet acclimates and evolves, and it has nothing to do with these natural phenomenons that have been going on this planet as long as history has been recorded. It's a tragedy. It's absolutely heartbreaking. My prayers, my thoughts, and my agony goes out to all of these families that have lost loved ones in this manner that was so sudden and so unanticipated. And it's always that situation. But I also need to add, people that live in this valley that know the situation are always aware that this is a possibility. And maybe it is time. Of course, apartment buildings, and on my recent trip down to the south part of the state for a golf trip, we were run off the golf course 3 different times when there wasn't a cloud in the sky. It was blue skies because lightning had been detected 15 miles away. And once in the pool, just clinging to the side, hanging around after a round, we were forced to get out of the pool and go inside because once again, electricity had been detected in the airwaves, although there was no sign of storms whatsoever. So that is due not to real concern for life and limb. That is due to liability and this litigious state we live in now. But maybe, just maybe, this will be a lesson that although it's inconvenient and although it's a long shot and a lot of times you're going to look ridiculous, schools now are closed if there's even a threat of weather. So we've already crossed that line a little bit, but maybe if there are not emergency sirens and there are not immediate procedures when the forecasters, who once again, there was no cut in forecasters, I failed to mention, any budget cuts for the National Weather Service, which do not include field officers, this is getting rid of the pile of bureaucrats that hang around Washington and only, make policy. They don't forecast the weather or have anything to do with this actual service that the National Weather Service provides. Those cuts, although they are scheduled, don't take effect till October. So accusing the Trump administration of being responsible for this is absolutely not only irresponsible, it's asinine and just completely non-productive, unnecessary, and inexcusable. The forecasters on the 4th of July, middle of the night, were there en masse because they knew this was a serious weather situation. Warnings were issued, but if there's any failure in this situation, perhaps local officials need to be better equipped in these high-risk areas. You can bet your bottom dollar that in hurricane-prone areas, there is plenty of warning. There is evacuations made in advance of storms arriving, and with this storm impending, the mass exodus doesn't require people jumping in their car. It basically just means get away from the river, get away from the portal where water's going to be rushing down, and get to higher elevation. If you've got a 45 minutes or an hour, or even in this case, with the first warning being at 1:14 in the morning, if you have to get the population up and get them to safety, maybe it's better to err on the side of caution and take the criticism if it turns out to be a false alarm, because it would have saved lives in this case if sirens went off, if activation of law enforcement had taken place, and if people would have taken the initiative to evacuate and not just take the chance that, well, maybe this won't pan out, because the warnings need to be severe enough and desperate enough, like the one around the time that the river was completely starting to overflow, that this was a potentially deadly situation. And even in that 45 minutes or an hour, a lot of people could have fled to safety and gotten to higher ground. Let's give huge credit to the people on the ground. Over 850 people were saved on Friday during the day and into Friday night and Saturday early morning hours. They found people clinging to different structures. They found actually people who had climbed trees. They found all kinds of people that had somehow managed to get to some kind of a bracing point in water. A couple of victims had been in water for 20 hours. And that's still, even in this time of year where it's hot during the day, water temperatures that even get down to about 80 degrees could be potentially fatal, particularly to people that have cardiovascular situations. So the bottom line is the immediate response of all the emergency workers, first responders, state and federal, and volunteers have done incredible work to save so many lives that were in desperate position, rescuing once again over 850 people over the last 48 hours. And those efforts continue on this Monday, several days removed from this, although sadly, shockingly, just heartbreakingly, most of the efforts right now are recovery instead of rescue. So again, shame on the people trying to take full advantage of a crisis. Never let a crisis go to waste. Well, they sure tried to not do that. But any person with a sensible, functioning brain needs to see right through this and be shocked and outraged, insulted, and disgusted that anybody would try to politicize and assign blame to their political rival for a natural disaster of this magnitude that has ravaged so many people in terms of affecting their lives, and in a hundred, a thousand, a million times worse, rob them of their children, their loved ones, their friends, their neighbors, their townspeople. And that's what you need to know today. Prayers to all of them. I hope you'll join me in making your thoughts and prayers for all of those families and all of those people who went literally through hell the last 72 hours. I'm Kip Kiefer. That's what you need to know. We'll be back with you again next week.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.